Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of people around the world. Today, it is my privilege to welcome a very, very accomplished lady, Anisha Motwani. Anisha, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Ashutosh.
Anisha is the founder of Storm the Norm Ventures. She's an author, she's an independent board director, and she's an advisor on branding and strategy. So Anisha, tell me a little bit about the three key milestones in your life or career.
When you look at it that way, there have been so many milestones. For me, the birth of my first child was my biggest milestone. Mm-hmm. Not so much marriage as the birth of my child, you know, because that clearly was a turning point. Mm-hmm. And that just changed life for me. Mm-hmm. The sense of responsibility, the sense of, you know, now knowing that you have another life to take care of. And therefore, you know, all the aspects of life, balancing, prioritization, all came into play. So that was one. The second one clearly was my break into the corporate world. I was in advertising, and advertising was something that, you know, I had accidentally got into. But in hindsight, it was one of the best things, industries that I could get into, knowing my skills and my interests. So I clearly had a blast there. But when I moved to General Motors, which is on the other side, creating your own brands, I was creating other people's brands, and then now you get the chance to create your own brands. So that was the second turning point. And the third one clearly is when I became an author. And I wrote my first book. So it looked like, you know, I mean, there is more to life than just corporate life.
That I agree. In fact, I have a lot of respect for authors because, you know, I've written many books. And I always say that anybody who's willing to put their thoughts out in the open and be open to criticism, mm-hmm. Those are strong people. So yeah. Well done. So let's talk about Storm the Norm. You know, Tell me first about your book and what motivated you to write. And then we'll come to brands.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, the two are in many ways connected because so many years of being part of corporate life, there were several realizations that I had. Mm-hmm. One was that what we read about businesses, the way businesses are built, the way success is created, the challenges that we face on a day-to-day basis are so different from the academic theoretical frameworks that are available, you know, that we study, that are available to us. And the reality that pans out on ground is so different, you know. And every day in the office fighting some new challenge, I was in a financial services industry, global financial meltdown happened, the regulatory challenges. There are daily new things that are happening. And our context is so unique to being our own context, okay. And I realized that there was nothing that was written about what happens in real life, how brands are built in the real world, not in the boardrooms or not in the academic frameworks and strategic books that we read. Mm. So I wanted to write this book to bring out the real stormers, actually Indian businesses that had managed to storm the norm. Okay? And that was the genesis. And I said, there is experiential knowledge. There is factual knowledge that is sitting out there in our own country, across categories, across brands. And let me write about those, because that learning will be far more valuable than anybody who can read any framework anywhere.
And just for our viewers and listeners, which are some of these companies that did storm the norm?
So it was a very difficult choice, because when you start actually looking at that, the width of what India has to offer, there was phenomenal success sitting. There were individual successes, there were MSMEs, there were, you know, there were startups. So what I did was we had to apply some filter, because finally it's a book. And I started with saying a 50,000 word book. So, you know, did some rough calculations, which means 20 chapters. And I started with the large corporates first, because that's the world that I came up in, you know. So I had the networks, I had the connections, you know, I had the reach to actually, you know, get to speak to them, validate the data and stuff like that. So I focused on the large corporates. But within that, what I did was I actually broke it into three categories. Okay. One is businesses that have been built in less than a decade, mm-hmm. okay, that didn't take years and years. The general belief is that brands take hundreds of years to build and billions of resources. So I wanted to, you know, start by saying, no, there are, in today's day and age, brands can be built much faster. There's a shortcut to building brands. So the kind of brands that had made early success in the new era, which was PVR and Make My Trip, then on the other side were legacy brands, okay? Brands that have endured hundreds of years. A Raymond, a Times of India. Right. My father read it, I read it. You know, my son-in-law got a Raymond suit. I got him one, you know, and I remember my husband, you know, my mother gave him one suit, you know. So these are brands that have endured hundreds of years. And in between them, there is a set of challenger brands like Tata Tea and Hero, Honda Motors and stuff like that. So that's the width. And then I tried to make sure that I'm covering as many industries as possible so it doesn't become domain specific. So fashion, automobiles, textiles, FMCG, you know, entertainment and just...
That must have taken a lot of research.
Yes, it took me 3 years almost.
Wow. So, you know, you mentioned when we were talking a few minutes ago that you were first building other people's brands, then you were building your own brand in, say, companies like General Motors, and now Anisha Motwani herself is a brand.
Please.
My question to you is, what goes into building a successful brand?
I think that I have now created my own proprietary framework, mm-hmm. and which is a very simple framework. At one level, it is extremely simple. Mm-hmm. And I say that the brand has got only two constituents. Okay. The brand has a purpose, mm-hmm. and the brand has a value system.
Correct.
Okay. And those are the two, what I call the soul of the brand, the internal, okay, aspect right. of the brand. If I have defined the purpose for my brand extremely well, okay, and it serves a meaningful role, not just in society, but also for my set of employees, for every individual who it touches. So purpose is clearly one, you know, component of the brand. And second is emanating from that purpose is the value systems of the brand. Right. In many ways, brands are like human beings, and let me not go there. Yeah. Now, once you have those, and I have proprietary frameworks that I use to make people arrive at, it's very different from the vision, mission statements. You know, every company has a vision, mission, goal statement. It's extremely different. I know purpose has become a cliche word, but the way I look at purpose is, it's basically, you know, something that's, Even a janitor in a bathroom in an organization should be able to play it back to you.
Right.
Okay. It should be that simple. It should be that emotional. It should be that evocative. So once we define the purpose and the value system, then there are other two aspects of the brand, which is the manifestation of the brand. Coming from here, how does the brand manifest itself? Through symbols, which is the physical aspects of the brand, the packaging, the logo, the identity, I call it the physicals. Mm-hmm. And then the brand has a voice, which is the expression. Okay. Because if you are a brand, if you have a certain value system, how do you give what's your voice? How do you communicate? Any touch point, anything, I'm not talking about advertising here. Mm-hmm. The minute you have these four constituents constant, okay, mm-hmm. first define the first two. Coming from there, it manifests itself in a voice and in a physical. Mm. That are the only four components of the brand, two internal, two external. Okay. And from there are several other things like sure. how do you get a big idea, positioning, and all the science of the brand.
I agree. I think that's very well put. I'm glad you say it's your proprietary thing because mm-hmm. you know, I think there's a lot of thought that's gone into it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you spoke about brands being like human beings, and that is my next question, which is that brands are living beings.
Yeah.
You know, and it's often been said, if you don't invest in a brand, they die.
Yeah.
And yet you spoke about when you were talking of Storm the Norm, Times of India, Raymond, they've been around for hundreds of years and younger brands.
Yeah.
What does a brand need to do to stay relevant for a long period of time?
See, I always say that brands do need a facelift from time to time. Okay. And I did a whole module, which is called Brands Need Spas Too. You know, you need to refresh, you need a facelift, you know, otherwise you will become irrelevant for the customer, for the segment that you are targeting. Okay. Now, how do you continuously reinvent yourself is a science by itself. Okay. Unfortunately, what happens is that when you do these things tactically, okay, you lose the consistency. What happens is then it's almost like today Anisha is known as a marketeer, tomorrow she will be known as a physicist. Mm-hmm. Third day she's known as a designer. Okay. Or today she's known for her value system of being authentic and speaking her mind. Tomorrow she comes across as somebody who's constantly challenging, who's judgmental. So that there goes my authenticity. Now those are little things, and those things come across in the manifested form, you know, of communication or physicals that we bring out of the brand. So by staying true to the soul, okay, which is the purpose and the value system, if you stay true to that and you pivot yourself to stay relevant, the language that I need to speak to the younger audience, to the college kids, is very different from the language that I speak in the boardroom. Am I, you know, without compromising on my value system? See, I try and make it very simple so that, you know, people understand that at the core of it is something that's extremely simple and human. It's just that we make it complex, okay? And secondly, we make it tactical. Brand needs consistency. A niche needs to be a consistent whole. I can't be one thing to one person, another thing to another person.
Right. Absolutely. Very well said. So, you know, one more question for branding. You know, from the time of the big advertising agencies, big budget advertising on television and newspaper and print and everything else, we've been invaded by the digital media. How do brands cope with the digital media? I mean, I find a lot of, you know, brand managers and marketing people struggling. What are your thoughts?
See, like, you know, I mean, having now done brand for almost 40 years, you know, I mean, in various ways, what we used to do earlier was that the brand process was like, had a traditional funnel. Correct. You had to create awareness for the brand. Then you had to create consideration. Yep. Then you had to create purchase intent. And then you had to create conversion. Okay. Correct. And then this was a funnel, which was like this vertical. Mm. Okay. Now that today has gone for a complete toss. Mm. Okay. Now there is nothing called a vertical funnel. There is a horizontal, and awareness has got replaced by access.
Correct.
The minute I give you access, okay. So that's the first this thing. Okay. I can start creating relevance for my brand the minute it is accessible to you. What's the use of creating a large brand if there is no access? Today, I want a brand that will get delivered to my doorstep on my terms and conditions. Okay. So I call it the four A's. So there is an access. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then the second most important thing is attractiveness of the brand. Okay. How attractive have you made your brand? Okay. Is it something that appeals to me? Is it relevant to me? So what are those elements? Mm-hmm. The third piece, which is becoming important, is affinity. Okay. Is there a certain intimacy that you've created? Attractiveness is one time. Okay. You get attracted to something. Tomorrow it could just be a pure lust and you might just drop out. Right. But affinity is something that is more bonding, that's more long term. So have you created an affinity? And the fourth one is affordability. It has become a very important aspect. No matter what we say, we call it value for money or whatever. Is it affordable within my budget? And that budget could be billions of dollars, and that budget could be a few rupees. Okay. So as long as you are managing the four A's horizontally at the same point of time and not looking at the funnel like this, there are chances that you will create, even if you are not a very old brand, even if you're not a legacy brand, even if you don't have billions of dollars, if you have created these four access points, you will be able to fast track your brand building process.
Very nice. Very nice. So now let's talk about your avatar as an independent director. You're on the board of several companies. What do you look for before you accept a board position?
So, you know, the kind of responsibility that is today sitting on the shoulders of independent directors, in fact, it's a little more scary than, you know, I mean, than one would actually want it to be. I mean, there is almost a nagging fear that is there at the back of one's mind, you know, all the time. At many levels, I'm being very honest, it's not a good feeling, because it is more punitive than productive. Okay. The whole mindset in the way the whole thing has been framed in terms of the responsibility of the directors has been framed. It needs to tone down and become a little more practical and realistic. So therefore, having said that, whatever it is, and despite that one has chosen to be on the boards, so the first thing that I look for is transparency and governance.
Correct.
That's the most important thing. Okay. How strong is the governance process? How transparent is the organization? Okay. So that's the first one. And the second one, I don't have too many criteria. Is it a strategic board where one is contributing and adding value? And that's why you see, I have a mix of big boards, small boards, mid-sized boards, whatever. It's the filter that I use is, am I adding value? Is my point of view being valued and respected? Am I contributing something? Is it a strategic board or is it only a statutory board that's just tick marking the compliance aspects? Well, that's very important, but is it going beyond that?
Wonderful. Well said. And, you know, you spoke about transparency in a boardroom. You know, I've served on the board of the Global Alliance for Vaccine, which in Geneva, which is considered the most transparent board in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that a lot of Indian board, and I'm not making this as a general statement, but a lot of Indian boardrooms lack transparency?
I don't know. See, my experience so far has been, is it intentional or is it non-intentional?
Okay.
If it is intentional, then it is very worrying. Okay. In most cases, I think the organizations themselves are learning the aspects of governance. Okay. They themselves are maturing in board processes. So to that extent, it's like the directors are learning, the companies and the management in the organizations are learning. So to that extent, my experience has been that most of the times, it is non-intentional if at all they are not transparent. It's not that they're trying to hide anything, okay? Because today they know that the responsibility and the liability and the punitive action is as much on them as it is on anybody else, okay? So in fact, they use the board as an insurance. It's almost like, if I have a good board, then at least they're guiding me. It's a hedge for me, against all the risks that can come to me.
Right.
So to that extent, I think it's a process of evolution and maturity. And it is now increasing by the day. And gradually you will see that, today, even the choice of people looking out for directors, independent directors, earlier it used to be friends and family and word of mouth. Today there are, professionals being sought out for their respective skills. Today there is a reputation check being done. So to that extent, those are all signs that, the companies do intend to make their board process more robust.
Very good. So let's move on, and I want to ask you a question on gender balance. You managed to get right to the top, broken through several glass ceilings. Gender balance is now being recognized across the country, and yet I've spoken to so many people. They said the process is still very slow. What are your thoughts, and how can this be corrected?
I think a lot of it also has to do with the women themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I always feel that, women are actually a more privileged lot because they work by choice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, most times, at least urban women I'm talking about, mm-hmm. They work by choice, and there is a reason why they are working is their own personal reason.
Sure.
Very few women work because of family reasons, okay, that I have to support the family income. Many women work because they like working, because they enjoy working.
Right.
And I'm talking about the corporate world that I come from. I'm not making a generic statement.
Yeah.
And my comments are also in that context.
Absolutely.
Now, do you take your job like a job, or do you take your job like a career? Okay. So are you working for the paycheck? Are you working for creating a career?
Mm.
Okay. Now that's one thing that women need to be very clear about, are you creating a career? Then, there is a certain path to creating a career. Okay. There's a certain perseverance that is needed. There's a certain knowledge that's needed. There's a certain amount of being able to manage and have a point of view, which is, an equally weighty point of view as your male colleagues, at any given point of time. Are you even investing in learning, reading, business matters, okay, which matter in a business world.
Right.
And the second part is, I think women also come with an expiry date syndrome. That's also something that's proprietary for me, because I experienced it, and I actually in hindsight have coined this phrase because I went through an expiry date syndrome twice over. Even before you come into a job, what happens is you'll say, I might have to leave my job when I get married, or I might have to leave my job when my kid is born, or I might have to leave my job when my kid has board exams, or I might leave my job when my husband gets transferred. Mm-hmm. See, I might have to leave my job. What happens is then they don't take their career seriously. Right. Okay. You know that there are several breaks that you are anticipating. So you might as well do something that, you know, is for the moment okay. Because and then you don't look at it like a long-term career perspective. And that is what I think, and also because you're working by choice, not because of push, the tendency to give up very easily and say, because there is nothing, there's no pressure, there's no burden. Okay, let me just, you know, I mean, I've had enough, you know, let me just give it up. Third thing that drives this decision is, of course, women's own sense of guilt. Okay, am I doing enough for my family? Okay, now those, that isn't a fourth thing that I can think of. If we manage these, and there are ways to manage this, okay? I'm a small town girl, born and brought up in Ajmer, got into an arranged marriage, lived in a joint family. My first child was born within 1 year of my marriage. I had a second child. I have moved industries, and I have learned the hard way and with experience that the minute you look at your job as a career, and some of these breaks will happen. I also took a sabbatical when my son was born. I gave up my job when my daughter had a 9th board's exam. Okay. But each time, in hindsight, with a lot of experience, pain, and learning, I realized that I like working. I will actually just shrivel if I don't have my intellectual, self stimulated. And I am not doing anybody a favor by being at home. Okay. So, and those, like I said, are experiences that you got in hindsight. It's important that you come back once you have that realization. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not easy to come back. It's easier said than done. Mm-hmm. Both the times I came back into the corporate world after breaks is I actually came down to a lower level, okay, in a smaller organization at less money. Mm-hmm. Both the times, but I got back. So if you have it in you, you have to just make sure that it's not important that you get the right job at the right time. You might not get it, but it's important that you get back into circulation. If you are good, you'll find your way around.
Well said. Well said. So I have time for a couple of questions for you personally.
Sure.
My first question to you is that what does success mean to Anisha?
See, this is a question that I grapple with a lot, and also inspired by my brother, Anil. You know, he stays in US and he does a lot of these. And that's the best definition that, you know, I have hung on to. I think success for me is being able to do, having the freedom to do what I really like. Okay. 5 years back when I started Storm the Norm, okay, I was still enjoying my job. I was at the peak. I was having a blast. I was doing very well. But I was still, you know, I still did not have the choice. I had to do what my role demanded me to do. I had to do what my boss demanded me to do, what my team expected me to do, what my peers, you know, would think about me. So I said, when I started this, I said, okay, at least let me have the freedom after working for so many years to choose and do what I really want to do. For me, that's the definition of success. Today, I choose to do what I enjoy doing.
Wonderful. And my last question to you.
Yes.
If you were a role model to millions of children who closely followed your life choices, what is the one thing you would change in yourself?
I think I'm a very intuitive and an impulsive person. Okay. Most of my decisions are based on instincts and generally just going for it and doing it. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think... And there are, what happens is I really respect my gut and my intuition. It's got me thus far. I have a lot of respect for it. But if I could just create a kind of a thinking feeling, you know, create a little gap between if I have a gut and an intuition, you know, can I go into a little bit of depth and, you know, get into a little bit of more fact checking before actually committing myself? So that for me is, I am a feeling person. Can I create a thinking feeling? In my work, I think through everything. You know, I have frameworks, I have this thing. But in my decision-making on many of these aspects of life, whether it is my investments, whether it is my marriage, whether it is my children, I mean, in hindsight, everything has been a series of intuitive, instinctive decisions that I have taken. And sometimes you feel that maybe, you know, if one had paused, thought it through, you know, it would have been a little different.
Terrific. Terrific. Anisha, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure and privilege speaking to you.
Thank you,
Ashutosh. I wish you and Storm the Norm lots of success.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.